document here. So as the community is likely aware, the city and borough of Wrangell, along with a number of assembly members and staff individually, are in a law, have been sued. And the suit alleges that there was inappropriate dealings in hiring by an individual. And that lawsuit has been ongoing since March of last year. And to date, the city and borough, well, I should say, through July of 2020, the city and borough of Wrangell has incurred just over $49,000 in legal fees. Our insurance company, APEI, covers 50% of the costs of the legal fees. So actually, it's almost $100,000 in legal fees. And at this point, it's actually more than $100,000 because we've got all of August fees on top of that. The good news is that we have now, our attorneys have now filed for a motion to dismiss with prejudice, meaning that we've asked, based on lack of participation and lack of information provided by the other party, that the motion, that the suit be dismissed. And with prejudice means that that individual is not able to bring a subsequent claim for this purpose against the city and borough of Wrangell or any other members of the lawsuit. So this has been a significant hit. I mean, tens of thousands of dollars that we could have spent on many of the needy projects that you very, very worthwhile projects that you heard we have needs of in the work session prior to the meeting tonight. So I just wanted to update you on that, Mr. Mayor. The one thing I wanted to clarify is I had previously reported to the assembly that we have a $50,000 deductible. And what I thought that meant is once we reached $50,000, then APEI would start paying for everything. That's not correct. And I updated that in this report. Our 50% cost share is required throughout the entire thing. Where the over $50,000 comes in is that if there is a settlement, if there were to be a settlement, that would be covered by APEI with the exception of a $10,000 deductible, and then we would be billed. If this lawsuit is dismissed, which we believe it will be, then there is the deductible doesn't factor into anything. It's just the 50% cost share throughout the entire case.
Any questions on anything from the borough manager? Sorry, Lisa, do you have anything else on the report or are you done?
No, Mr. Mayor, not unless there are questions on any of the other reports under my report.
Any questions from anyone? Seeing none, Borough Clerk Lane, you are up.
All righty, I will make it quick. First of all, we are nearing the end of declaration for candidacy for the upcoming election elected seats. Since we have so many people on the line, I want to take the opportunity to say we have available borough mayor. We have two borough assembly seats for three-year terms. We have one borough assembly seat for a one-year unexpired term. We have one three-year term school board seat, and we have one Port Commission three-year term seat, and we have one Port Commission two-year unexpired term seat. Declaration for candidacy will end on Monday, August 31st at 4 o'clock. So if you are interested in filing for declaration for candidacy for any of those seats, please come and see me, give me a call. I will talk to you about it, and it's not a difficult process. So anyways, just give me a call or come in and see me. Election day, of course, will be on October 6th, and then backtracking a little bit. Absentee voting begins on September 21st. If anybody is not going to be in town for the election or from the 21st up to October the 5th, again, give me a call, shoot me an email, and I can help you with either voting by mail or voting by fax. The voting precinct on election day will be open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And the crew that Sarah Merritt is putting together is being very cautious. We have PPE, and I've worked with Dee Dee diligently Dorian Sprace, sorry, to receive PPE. And she's been amazing in getting me stuff that I need. And yep, I was able to get some sanitizing wipes at one of the local grocery stores for that. And I'm super excited. And I feel very confident that it'll be safely done. Cindy Crary over at the Nolan Center was able to clear out the big room. I'm sure many of you saw on Election Day that this one we just had a week or so ago, that everything was spread out, everything was being done safely. The workers wear masks and face shields and gloves and sanitize the pens. I mean, yeah, it just, it's wonderful. So anyway, sorry, I ramble on. That's all really I have.
Elections get you all fired up. I love it. That's great.
I love it.
Democracy. All right. Any questions for Clerk Lane? All right. I'm not seeing any. Any mayor and assembly business? Does anybody have any reports for the assembly? City Manager Von Bargen, can I please ask, I was out fishing during the recent SEPA meeting. Have we released any public information yet on the bidding process for the underwater cable between Mitkoff and Banks?
We have not, Mr. Mayor, but we expect that there will be a special meeting called to approve that contract in the near future, as negotiations seem to have be almost wrapped up.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And anything else from SEPA the community should know about?
No, not right now. More to come related to that project and what the potential financial impacts to SEPA and therefore all rate payers could ostensibly be.
Thank you. Any other reports from anyone? All right, seeing none. Item number 10, mayor and assembly appointments, there are none. Item number 11, public hearing, there is none. Item number 12, unfinished business A, approval of fiscal year 2019 audit. This has been postponed from the August 11th, 2020 regular assembly meeting. Lisa, do you want to walk us through that? And I'm hopeful that we have somebody from BDO on the line.
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Can we first get a motion?
Oh, sorry, can we have a motion? Yes, please.
Move to approve the fiscal year 2019 audit. Gilbert?
Morrison, second.
Morrison, seconded. Thank you. We'll move into discussion. And Lisa, if you could walk us through this, please.
Yep, Mr. Mayor, this item was postponed because there were items of findings that needed to be addressed, and the assembly requested to have a member of the audit team available to speak to that. Joyce reached out to them and made arrangements for that. And my assumption is that someone from BDO is on the line. And so Joyce, I believe she will introduce who that person is.
Thank you. Joyce, are you on?
Oops, okay. Yes, I'm Sam Thomas is online. He is our auditor from BDO.
Excellent. Hi, Sam. If I could just get you to hold 1 minute. Assemblymember Morrison, you had a question?
No, I'm sorry. Okay,
no problem.
Put my hand.
Sorry about that, Sam. Just trying to manage a Zoom meeting here. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Mr. Mayor, members of the Assembly. Hi, my name is Sam Thompson, and I'm an audit director at BDO in Anchorage, and I'm the individual responsible for the City and Borough of Wrangell's fiscal year 2019 audit.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Appreciate you being on the line and available to answer questions for the Assembly. At this point, what I'd like to do is, Joyce, could you take us through some of the audit, and then I'd like to give Mr. Thompson a chance to address findings, concerns, strong points with the Assembly, and then an opportunity for the Assembly to ask questions of both of you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. You all should have got the audit, I think, the last meeting. It's pretty standard of what we normally get. What we mainly need to discuss today is the last five or six pages, start on 139, about the findings during a single audit. You have a single audit when you get a federal funds or state funds. And 2019, we were doing the Harbor Project. So basically the findings were about some of our internal control. And that's what I was hoping Sam would explain to you guys of what they found.
Certainly, Mr. Thompson, can you go through that particular finding with the assembly so we understand it a bit better?
Certainly. So as Joyce mentioned, part of when we do our audit in accordance with three standards. The first being government auditing standards, or GAS, G-A-S. The other is federal single audit standards, or the uniform guidance. And the last would be state of Alaska single audit standards. In each of those standards require that we evaluate internal controls in our planning and performance of the audit. Now, we don't issue an opinion over internal controls. However, if we are aware of certain deficiencies in internal controls that we believe are either significant or might create a material weakness or a material error in the financial statement balances or items being presented, we are required by our professional standards, generally accepted auditing standards, to make those known to those charged with governance, with that being the Borough Assembly. So in our audit and in our evaluation and our planning and performance of the audit of internal controls related to both financial reporting and also single audit, we did identify four deficiencies in internal controls that we believe are either significant or warrant a material weakness. So for a little context, there's three levels of control of deficiencies. The first is just a plain deficiency in internal controls. That doesn't require communication to the assembly. We would communicate those just with Joyce and with Lisa, members of management. Anything greater than that, a significant deficiency or a material weakness, would require formal disclosure. So I'll go through the first two. The first two are material weaknesses. That'd be finding 2019-001 and 2019-004.
Mr. Thompson, could you give us a page number, please, on that, on our audit form?
Yes. So that would start on page, finding 2019-001 is on page 140 of the financial statements.
Okay, thank you.
And this one's material weakness and has to do with overall general ledger reconciliation and external financial reporting. So in our audit of the financial statements and the general ledger, that is, we came across a variety of individual balances that were misstated, and they were misstated to a degree that they required a formal adjustment in order to make the balances correct in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. So those adjustments were made by Joyce and they are reflected in the financial statements. So at the end of the day, the financial statement balances after those corrections were made are in our opinion materially correct. However, the fact that we had to propose an adjustment during our audit work led us to believe that there are material errors in the borough's internal controls over financial reporting. Otherwise, those errors would have been caught during normal management functions prior to our arrival and our audit test work being performed. So we had adjustments over a variety of accounts, including opening net position or opening equity balances, capital assets, depreciation expense, internal balances, that's cash between funds, as well as transfers. Just the overall volume of the corrections that needed to have been made, as well as the size of some, of a few of them, did warrant a disclosure of a material weakness. So that would be finding 2019-001. The other material weakness is on page 143, and that's 2019-004. And this has to do with reporting under state single audit requirements. The state requires that the audit be completed and submitted within 9 months of year end. This year, they actually gave an extension by 1 month due to COVID-19. Fortunately, the borough didn't meet that requirement, and as the financial statements weren't issued and single audit wasn't completed until June of 2020, so approximately 11 and a half months after fiscal year end. So because of that, under state requirements, we had to issue a material weakness due to reporting. And the reasons for the delay had to do with finding 2019-001, just the overall status of the books and records were not such that we were able to complete our audit in a timely manner. So those two are our two material weakness, which are the most severe of our findings. The other two findings on page 141 and 142, finding 2019-002 and 003, those are what we refer to as significant deficiencies. So they're in that middle ground of in terms of severity of findings, but still require disclosure. 2019-002 on page 141 had to do with the journal entry review approval and support process. So journal entries are manual adjustments made to the financial records. Given their nature that they're a manual adjustment, there needs to be a certain amount of segregation of duties between who is preparing that entry and whether or not there's a qualified individual besides the preparer that can adequately review and approve that entry prior to being posted. Without that segregation of duties, there exists a greater opportunity for someone to commit wrongdoings or potentially fraud via journal entry without a proper segregations of duties and review. So we noted that there were entries being posted without proper review and approval prior to being posted, as well as entries and did not have appropriate supporting documentation retained to support the nature of the journal entry. Finally, finding 2019-003 on page 142 has to do again with state single audit. And it relates to the community assistance program that the borough receives. And in our test work of non-payroll expenditure transactions, we came across 10 transactions out of a total of 47 that we were required to test, and where there was not proper supporting documentation that could have been that was provided to us in order to evaluate the legitimacy of those costs and whether or not proper internal controls were in place to that approved and supported those costs prior to them being reported. So those are the four findings. I'm happy to answer any questions related to them or anything else related to the audit as a whole.
Does anybody have any specific questions for Mr. Thompson? Yeah, Assemblymember Gilbert.
To your knowledge, have all the procedures that caused these deficiencies in these findings, have the procedures been repaired, modified, and are now in proper working order?
That's a great question. And actually, anytime a finding is issued, management has the opportunity to prepare what's referred to as a corrective action plan. And you can find the borough's corrective action plan starting on page 147. And that's exactly it, where management addresses and acknowledges the issues and also comes up with a plan of action to remediate and fix the finding into the future. We have not started the 2020 audit yet, so I can't speak to whether or not the corrective action plan was followed through appropriately and whether or not the findings were mitigated, but I do know a plan was put into place and with all the intention of correcting those issues in 2020.
Sorry, go ahead, Patty.
Oh, and one other question. I always worry about our bad debt ratio. Is it, can you speak to that?
Certainly. Let me find the page in the statements where it relates to that. So as you know, the borough has several accounts with receivables in the various enterprise funds and governmental activities. In general, the borough doesn't report any sort of allowance related to intergovernmental receivables. Those would be receivables from the federal and state government, just due to historically they've always been 100% received at some point in time. However, as you know, customer accounts, there always is accounts that eventually will go uncollected. So in our audit, we do substantive test work over those allowances. And now an allowance is an estimate by management because there's no way of knowing in the future whether or not a balance will be collected, but management, given prior history and overall trends, will come up with their best estimate of what will go uncollected. We do evaluate that, whether or not the inputs that management used and their historical analysis, whether or not that's sufficient and in accordance with professional standards. and whether or not those calculations are accurate. In our test work that we performed, we noted no issues, and we believe the estimates at the point in time they were made, June 30th, 2019, were appropriate and correct given the available information.
Other questions? Yes, Assemblymember Powell.
Have we started the 2020 audit?
No,
we have not.
Okay.
And
go ahead, Mr. Mann.
No, sorry, go ahead, Lisa.
I just want to clarify that this audit is for FY18-19 and that Joyce came on board in August of 2019. And so her work has been to put the corrective actions in place.
And we have, yes, I appreciate that Joyce got here late, but my question to you is, and this is a tough question, you were here and I have been around audits a fair bit. This is a relatively tough audit with some fairly big holes. And have we put things in place to prevent those sort of holes from showing up again, like ledger accountability and things not being approved and signatures missing? That just can lead to fraud and waste, and that worries me. So I want to make sure that we are getting this stuff in place.
Mr. Mayor, if I could answer that.
Sure.
So all of our expenditures now have to be approved by the department managers. They have to sign them or we don't pay them. And then we are also, we are scanning all our invoices and attaching them to the software. So that was a big thing. We couldn't find a lot of stuff last year. Also, the other big thing is on all the journal entries, I have someone else putting them in and then I approve them. That is the big thing is that all, and the department managers, I know they kind of get upset with me sometime, but we will not pay unless they have been approved and it is against their budget.
Okay.
So Mr. Mayor, I think, I guess I would add, we went through a period of transition where we had a finance director that was working remotely because we were having a very difficult time finding a replacement finance director. And what's interesting to me is that we found internal controls where this, with the exception of the finance director working remotely, the staffing had not changed from the way the internal control structure had not changed here since before my arrival. And so why we ended up with internal control issues, I don't know, other than that the remote work did not lend itself to appropriate checks and balances. And that, responsibility rolls uphill. And so me making sure that the finance director in working remotely was crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's, I trusted that stuff was happening. And obviously it was not.
Assemblymember Powell.
So I just asked the question about the 20, which I meant 19 and 20 budget, why we have not started it. But, that's the question. I mean, we are done. We're almost 2 months into, why are we not started our internal, the thing with BDO? And also, I don't remember what meeting it was, but it was some concerns that BDO was not doing stuff in a timely manner, but we just heard that BDO was not getting stuff in a timely manner. So I'm kind of wondering which one is it, and are we going to be behind the eight ball again? Here we are in August, almost September.
So my, I mean, obviously I need to let Sam speak to this, but this is, my understanding from Joyce is that we anticipated our audit for this year would actually be done in December. Our audit for 18-19 would be done in September, in December of last year, and things carried out significantly. You know, it is my understanding, it's my belief that when a request is made for information, we provide that as quickly as possible. Now, I will say, and Joyce may want to speak to this, she was coming in brand new and had to, you know, do research and wade through things to be able to provide some information at times. But to my knowledge, there was not ever an issue with timely response on information. But I need to let Joyce speak to that.
Joyce, do you want to follow up on that?
Yes, so that's true. I could not find a lot of the documentation, and that took a considerable amount of time. And then it was just timing. We try to get them done by December. Sam and I've already talked about it this year, and we hope to have it done by December. They're planning to do their field work in October. So I will have the trial balances to them by then.
Thank you.
Yes, I would just add, our plan is right now to start the first week of October. And we are, as a firm, we have a pretty tight schedule in terms of the audits that we do. And we make every intention to get our work done as quickly and as accurately as possible. But anytime we encounter significant delays in getting requests, it does push things further down the road, because it's difficult for us to kind of stop what we're doing as a business and wait for those items to come trickling in. So if this year, if we're able to get what we need in the October timeframe, then we should be on schedule to being completed by the end of December.
Thanks, Mr. Thompson. Assemblymember Gilbert.
Yes, my question involves bank reconciliations and journal entries. Borough manager, do you sign off on those? And what frequency do you sign off on them?
For journal entries and bank reconciliations? No, I have actually not ever signed off on those. I sign off on the expenditures.
Okay. Well, then my question is to Sam, what would be the standard operating procedure concerning those two items? How can you get a sign off on those, or should you?
Well, I would say bank reconciliations and journal entries always need at least two sets of eyes. You always have to have one, the actual creator or the preparer of the entry or the reconciliation, and then you need a separate reviewer who can has the relevant skills, knowledge, and experience to review either the bank reconciliation or the journal entry and its support and reach a conclusion that reconciliation or that entry is correct and accurate, and then approve that separate from the preparer before the details are entered into the accounting system and books of record.
And that should be accomplished monthly? And should there be a form where that second reviewer signs off, or do they sign the document itself?
I would say as a best practice, having an official form to attach to a journal entry or a bank rec would be great. In our opinion, if you can initial it or sign on the actual entry or reconciliation itself, that serves the same purpose. But we do need to see, under our professional standards, physical documents or documentation or evidence of that review. We just can't take someone's word for it. So you would need either a formal signature, initial, or some sort of physical documentation on all those events. And I would say the bank reconciliations should be done monthly. That just coincides with how you get your bank statement from third-party banks. Journal entries should be reviewed anytime they're being inputted into the system, whether they're being batch processed and inputted on a weekly or monthly basis. That's when the review should take place. If they're being entered in real time, then they should be reviewed in real time prior to being entered.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments or thoughts for Sam and Joyce? Okay. Any, just generally on the audit, anybody have any other questions? It sounds like we've raised some good thoughts here for further follow through and discussion. And I appreciate again, Assemblymember Gilbert raising these great questions. Sam, any other thoughts before we let you cut out here?
I don't have too much on the 2019 audit. I would just add a few things about 2020 and how your financial statements will be different. We will highly suggest or pretty much require for us to issue a clean opinion that the borough include in their notes to the statements this year mentions of COVID-19 and the CARES Act, both how COVID-19 has affected the operations of the borough as well as the borough's finances. And that ties in very closely with the CARES Act, the funds being received. It's to be determined the extent we'll have to audit the CARES Act funds. Those are considered federal funds. And if they exceed $750,000 expended prior to June 30th, we will have to audit CARES Act as its own, what we refer to as a major program. And the guidance related to the CARES Act and the audit procedures around that has been delayed by the federal government. They're looking to have that out in mid-October. So if they can stay on track, that'd be good. If not, that could create issues for not just the borough, but governments across the whole country.
Thank you. Any other questions or thoughts? Joyce, has that got it for you?
Yes, it does.
Thank you. Lisa, anything else to add before we go to a poll vote?
No, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. Kim, poll vote, please.
Yes. Assembly members Gilbert?
Yes.
Morrison?
Getting muted, yes.
Ryan Howe?
Yes.
David Powell?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
And Mayor Prasanka?
Yes. Okay, on to item 13A, or 13 new business, 13A. Approval to negotiate the sale of borough-owned property lot 6A, block 6, block 61, Industrial Park Subdivision 3 to Brett Woodbury and Mike Matney.
Move to approve the negotiation of the sale of borough-owned property lot 6A, block 61, Industrial Park Subdivision 3 with Brett Woodbury and Mike Matney.
Moved. We have a second.
Second. Howe.
Been seconded by Assemblymember Howe. Discussion, Lisa, or I'm not sure if Carol's on.
Carol's on the line as well and can help speak to this. But Mr. Mayor, essentially, we've had a request from these two parties to be able to purchase parcels adjacent to land they already own within the Industrial Park subdivision. The Planning and Zoning Commission has approved a recommendation to the Assembly to move forward with this. Staff agrees with it based on the situation with these with the parcel. Where we're at here, so we're asking for concurrence to move forward with the sale procedure similar to that which we did at the last meeting with another parcel. But where we need some guidance from you is we have an appraisal of the property that was done in July of 2019. And as a rule, appraisal should be done within a year of time, but we recommend we go ahead and use that appraisal rather than having another one conducted. And we just would like concurrence from the Assembly, some heads nodding that that's okay as we consider moving forward with this, if you are to vote yes on this motion. And I do know that Mr. Woodbury and Mr. Matney are here in case the Assembly members have any questions for them.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions? Carol, sorry, do you have anything to add there? I know you're dying to speak.
No, I don't. Not at this time.
Okay, thank you. Does any assembly member have any question for Lisa, Carol, Mr. Matney, Mr. Woodbury? I'm not seeing anything here. Kim, please, can we have a poll vote on the item?
Yes. Assembly members Morrison?
Yes.
Ryan Howe?
Yes.
David Powell?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
Gilbert?
Yes.
And Mayor Prasanka?
Yes. I just need to get back on my page here. I apologize. I have a very clunky scroll to move back and forth. Oh my goodness. I apologize, folks. Okay. I'm sorry, I'm having a little bit of technical difficulty. One moment, please.
Is it beyond your control?
It is beyond my control, Anne. It's all beyond my control. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is all beyond my control. I have had a major failure here. One minute. I have to get back into my packet. I apologize. Okay. I am sorry. Okay. Item 13B, approval of rescission of CARES Act funding to Wrangell Public Schools in the amount of $250,000. Assembly Gilbert, you're going to recluse yourself at this point, correct?
Correct.
Okay, do we have a motion?
Move to approve rescission of CARES Act funding to Wrangell Public Schools in the amount of $250,000.
Moved. Do we have a second?
Second, this is Powell.
We moved, seconded. Discussion. Lisa, do you want to start us off on this one?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor. I received concern from members of the assembly regarding a situation that took place last week with regard to purchase of materials on a trip to Juneau. And so there was there were concerns raised that potentially CARES Act money was being spent inappropriately for the purchase of supplies and other things. And it was requested to me that this item be put on the agenda in order for a discussion to take place. And so that's what I've done.
Thank you very much.
I believe that the superintendent has provided a list of purchases and to the city clerk, and that that information was emailed out to the assembly.
Thank you, Lisa. Kim, we have a couple of people to speak. Can we please take them in the order that they contacted you?
Yes, Mr. David Wilson.
Mr. Wilson, please go ahead.
Hello, thank you. My name is David Wilson. I live at 2.6 miles of Mobile Highway. I'm grateful for the opportunity to express my thoughts and feelings about the events this last weekend. I know it stirred up some tremendous activity and emotions, and unfortunately, much of it was negative and probably justifiably so. There was a lack of communication with the board and the community. However, I believe that the intent was good and not to bring injury to the district or the community. The school board had a special meeting last night to bring everything out in the open and to answer the concerns that have been expressed. It was our intent to address these concerns and are moving forward to rectify the mistakes. We acknowledge the trip violated some of our own policies and practices. We acknowledge the pain and feelings this trip caused, especially in light of all the work we have been doing to build a strong working relationship with the city, the borough, and the community. We have already put in review a board policy to address and insert a local preference clause for purchasing whenever reasonable. I know the entire school board spent many hours to research, prepare, communicate, and take action to rectify and prevent the same kind of mishaps in the future. Last night, I came away feeling drained, but proud of our school board and the work we're doing. It's an honor to work with a very dedicated group of individuals that care deeply for our students and our schools. Now, in the aftermath of all that has happened, I'm here to ask you that we can put this behind us and rebuild the relationship we've been building. It's my hope and prayer that we continue to work and collaborate together for the good of our students and schools. Believe me, I know and can feel the pain and distrust that blew up out of this, but I also believe it isn't anything that can't be repaired. You all have the letter that Dr. Lancaster sent and addressed to the assembly, business community, charitable organizations, and knowing Dr. Lancaster, I believe it was also for the community at large. I hope you know and respect the time and efforts of a dedicated school board. You can be assured we are being proactive and already taking steps to make improvements. So at this time, I sincerely request that you vote against the rescission of the CARE Act funding to the Wrangell Public Schools. I hope and pray that you, like us, want to see our schools not only educate and inspire every student, but to provide it in a safe, healthy environment. Please make no mistake, the portion of the CARES Act funding for education is needed to continue to establish a safe, healthy learning environment so our students and their parents can feel safe and secure. If we let the mistake of one take away from the staff, students, and all involved, we are failing in our stewardship to our students. I know we can put this behind us and carry on. In my experience, it's better to be builders than demolitions. I sincerely believe these events do not have to be a continual threat to the work in which we are engaged. Thank you for your time and for listening.
Mr. Wilson, thank you so much for your comment. Really appreciate it. And thank you for your work with the school board. Kim, next.
Yes, Mr. Aaron Angerman.
Mr. Angerman, are you on?
I'm here, thank you. Aaron Angerman, 725 Evergreen Avenue. I'm here to speak on item 13B, the potential rescission of $250,000 CARES Act funding to the school district. I want to start this off by saying, of course, my speaking here tonight is not on behalf of the school board or any individual board members, but as a concerned elected official and parent in the school district. I do have some concern even seeing this on the agenda this evening. And I hope that in the future, as a school board, we have one employee, and that is the superintendent. And once we were received knowledge of this, we moved quickly and deliberately, and we held a meeting on Monday and took our first steps towards resolving this issue in-house. I think as a board member, I would appreciate some support from the assembly that we can't operate on our own timeline to do these in a timely manner and to the extent which we seem fit. And then if we cannot do so in a timely manner or up to your standards, then the assembly come in, because I think that the added pressure and stress on the board members and staff from the looming rescission in the agenda and the rumor mill that has since run through social media and around town may have been resolved had these channels of communication directly been brought to the assembly, been rerouted through the school board. I just hope that that would help us to resolve business quickly, more deliberately. You have enough to worry about, as do we, but I think that we're handling this well. And again, we're taking our steps. If you were watching the meeting yesterday, the concerns were not lost on the board. It was a very emotional meeting. And I believe that we are taking the correct steps towards getting past this and putting it behind us. As a parent of a second grader and a sophomore, this potential rescission worries me, as I have great concerns over the long-term future of our school system. As the state funding dries up and as local sources appear to be scarce, and with the uncertainty under COVID, we're relying on this $250,000 to start safely, provide options for virtual and in-person learning, and also saves us from tapping into future school years and putting those years at risk. I do believe that this $250,000 investment in our schools is exactly that, an investment. And the only people this rescission would really hurt are the teachers and staff and the students. Again, it's not lost on us, your concerns, and we will definitely be working in the days to weeks to continue to find answers to how we can properly do this and address it. But I encourage you to vote no on the rescission of the $250,000 of CARES Act funding to the school to help us open the school safely 2 weeks from today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Angerman, and thank you for your work on the school board as president of the school board. We appreciate it. Okay, and I would like to now open it up to Dr. Lancaster, if you'd like to make a few comments, and then I'm going to open it up to questions. And if you're willing to also take some questions from the any assembly members that might have some, I would just ask the assembly, I would like to keep this as much as possible to directly, to relate it to the CARES Act money or to the impact of, general fund funds in the city and how that might relate. Because there is an interrelationship to this $250,000 that was given to the school. And the interrelationship is this. We had $500,000 remaining in our CARES Act money. We gave $1 million in direct relief to businesses in this community and fishermen that were suffering. $1 million off the top. We had about 3.8. We did some new equipment for EMS that they needed in order to respond during COVID. And then we did some other equipment, like we bulk purchased hand sanitizer and other things that we were able to get out. We put a committee together to help businesses open responsibly. And so we basically, the money is spent down to the point of $500,000. That's it. At the end of that $500,000, or so we gave $250,000 to school, the end of the, if we spend the 250, if let's say we had an outbreak and we had to spend $250,000, once that money's gone, we're now spending money out of our general fund. We're now spending our money on COVID stuff. So in essence, by us allocating that $250,000, and that we've also allocated touchless faucets and other things to the school that we're going to take care of through other appropriations. Once that money is gone, and we have to respond, we are responding out of our general fund. And it is not looking great for more CARES Act money coming to our community. So in essence, everything that we've done could potentially wind up having, the by allocating money away to the school, could potentially have a negative impact on the city's bottom line. So I want to try to stick fairly closely to the CARES Act money, but I'm also going to respect questions regarding that, you know, If we're offsetting school budgets, at the end of the day, we may hurt our own budget. So with that, I'm going to allow Dr. Lancaster some time to address the assembly and give us some thoughts and where you're at with this right now would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Debbie Lancaster. I'm the superintendent at Wrangell Public Schools, and I really appreciate this opportunity to come to you and to speak to you and to kind of see your faces and issued yet another very sincere apology. Like I said in my letter, and I'd be happy to read my letter if that's anyone's wish, but as I said in my letter, I had no idea the perspective that people had. I was just in a hurried frenzy to try to go get some supplies that I understood were not available and were very necessary for reopening school in a safe way. And actually Mr. Josh Blatchley would be able to expound on that when I get to that point. We would need the money to be able to fund some positions to help with our sanitation and with our screening of potential symptomatic students. The lion's share of the money that you were allocating is for those three full-time positions with benefits, even though they're only going to last until December. We thought that it might just be a good thing to employ people and put money back into the economy, the local economy. And we haven't spent that money yet because we haven't hired those people yet, but we do need those positions. The money we've spent so far, I sent you a list of the things that we've spent so far. And Mr. Blatchley can expound on some further things that we've have ordered or on back order and that sort of thing, that we would have to cancel those orders if it's possible, or fund out of our general fund. The good news is that we finished our audit for 2020 and that we had no findings. And so if we can stay on our budget for our general fund, which I'm hoping we can, then we're in better shape than we've been in the past at certain times. And so I understand your situation, having gone through so much learning about the audits and things like that. I'm listening to everything that everybody says about, you know, the reopening of schools and keeping people safe. And I've had an amazing staff work. I don't even know how many hours. I just can't even fathom how many hours at no charge through the summer. Just trying to figure all this out. This is the biggest mess I've ever seen in my life. And it's taken its toll on all of us. I mean, I don't know one person that isn't just kind of on the edge of stress. And I clearly made a mistake. I'm very sorry. I had no idea the perception that would spread through the community. That's kind of it, other than if you wanted Mr. Blatchley to kind of, at this point,
Debbie, I'm going to get Mr. Blatchley to hold. And I would like to open it up to the assembly members to ask you specific questions regarding the incident. And I think I will try to recap the incident from at least what we've been told, so that we can figure stuff out. What took place was that a decision was made, relatively snap decision, that you were backordered on your supplies for COVID for reopening your school, and you chartered a plane, flew to Juneau, and shopped for about, near as I can figure, what you're asking for reimbursement was about $1,500 in COVID supplies. You took four administrators to Juneau to do this shopping trip, and you it was things like hand sani and masks and some face shields and backpack sprayers. And again, I'm just working off of the information that I have received. And those four individuals went up, and then you took a ferry, the breakaway ferry back with that equipment. Now, you purchased other things while you were there. Fantastic. That's good for the school district. But from our perspective, the travel costs obviously were extensive on this. And I believe I heard board member Gilbert last night in the meeting say that it was roughly 41% of the total expenditure, but it actually exceeded the actual COVID items as near as I could tell, at least from what you're asking reimbursement for. But that's a recap. This got out into the community, and community members started contacting the city assembly members saying, what the heck is going on? Why are four senior people from the school going up to Juneau on a private plane to go shopping? That was the first question. And then the second question that we had was just regarding what the COVID fund is paying for, because we you know, obviously we weren't sure at that time even what was going on. But that's just for to bring people up who don't know what's going on. That's what took place. Then we said, okay, hold on. We want to know what's going on, and so we need to get this onto the agenda. And I asked you on the weekend to please come, and you were fairly adamant on the weekend that you wouldn't be able to make it because you've got teachers starting tomorrow and you didn't think you'd be able to make it and so on. So I think, you know, we weren't sure where we'd be at tonight, and I appreciate that you came tonight. I really do. And I appreciate that your board president spoke and a board member spoke. And so And I appreciate that Assemblymember Gilbert, Board Member Gilbert, requested the special meeting on Monday night. I appreciate all those things. But the CARES Act funds are not, they're not wide open. We're going to be audited. The city is going to be audited potentially by the government on what we spent the CARES Act money on. When you're spending the CARES Act money, you are in essence an extension of the city. We're on the hook if you spend our money on stuff that isn't reimbursable, we get to pay that back. So we still have a very vested interest. And typically we do not weigh our way into your finances in the least, except when it's money that we actually have control of those purse strings. So that's why we're here tonight. That's the reason why. So I'm kind of answering your president's question about why are we doing this? Well, we're doing this because, quite frankly, this assembly is alarmed at what took place. So with that, I'm going to open it up now to the assembly to ask a few questions, if they have any. And for Dr. Lancaster or Lisa, or actually, I think the other person that would have answers for us is our finance director. So we'll open it up at that and ask Assemblymember Morrison.
Yes, I have a question probably for Joyce. The money has not gone wholly to the school. We are paying as they present invoices. Is that correct or is that not correct?